If we go to the next system, which is the ADH system. Now, for some reason, step one very heavily tests antidiuretic hormone. It's a fairly simple, well understood system, and that may be why they do ask a large number of questions on this system. So this is a very high yield system. It's very important to understand all the details. Just to make a few general statements about the ADH system. ADH is considered to be a major controller of water excretion and therefore extracellular volume. Major job of the ADH system is to control extracellular volume. Another role of ADH is to control body osmolarity. Now, because ADH controls osmolarity, ADH regulates extracellular sodium concentration. Therefore, it is ADH that regulates extracellular sodium concentration. Now, I think most of you realize if you have a problem with sodium concentration, it is generally not a sodium problem, it's generally a water problem. So if you have a problem with sodium concentration, it is in most cases a water problem, and it could be simply an ADH problem. Now, this is where we have to be very careful here. Now, the osmoreceptors, as we'll state again in a few minutes, are very sensitive receptors. They can pick up a very small change in extracellular osmolarity. The second role of ADH is to regulate body osmolarity. And because it regulates osmolarity, it regulates sodium concentration. Therefore, ADH is the hormone that regulates sodium concentration. Now, most of you know that if you have a sodium concentration problem, you generally do not have a sodium problem. In most cases, it's a water problem. And in many aspects, in many cases, it's simply an ADH problem. Now, this is where we have to be very careful. ADH controls extracellular volume as well as extracellular osmolarity. Because in most cases, and this is a little bit of an opinion here, because in most cases, volume regulation takes priority over osmoregulation, most people will accept that the main job of ADH is to regulate extracellular volume. If your volume depleted, you will sacrifice osmolarity in most cases to bring volume back towards normal. Because the body is willing to sacrifice osmolarity, it is reasonable to conclude that the major job of ADH is to regulate extracellular volume. Now, the entire system, all the major points in the system are presented in this figure right here. And the details are present in your handout. Now, the afferent input to the system is on the left side here. The efferent or output of the system is on the right side. Now, I am going to start with the output or efferent aspects of this system here. And the first point I want to heavily emphasize is that ADH is synthesized in cell bodies of neurons. More specifically, these cell bodies are located in the supraoptic and paraventricular nuclei of the hypothalamus. So ADH is synthesized in the cell bodies of neurons in the supraoptic and paraventricular nuclei of the hypothalamus. Now, because it is a water-soluble hormone synthesized by neurons, after the ADH is synthesized, it will be packaged in vesicles transported down the axons to be stored and released from the nerve endings. And the nerve endings are located in the posterior pituitary. A very big point to remember is ADH is synthesized in the hypothalamus, but it is stored and released from the posterior pituitary. It's very important to remember that ADH is synthesized in neurons in the hypothalamus, but it is stored and released from nerve endings in the posterior pituitary. Very big point for the exam. Now, ADH, when it is released into the circulation, will go to its major target tissues. And as far as we're concerned for step one, the only major target tissue is the renal collecting duct. And in the renal collecting duct, ADH increases water reabsorption. It also increases urea reabsorption. But it does not affect electrolyte reabsorption. That's a distractor on step one. You simply remember that ADH increases both water and urea reabsorption in the collecting duct specifically. It does not affect electrolyte reabsorption in the kidney. Now, they also expect you to know exactly how this reabsorption is accomplished. ADH increases water reabsorption specifically by increasing the permeability of the collecting ducts to water. ADH simply inserts water channels in the membrane, and the water is reabsorbed passively. Now, as we mentioned in renal, the interstitial osmolarity in the medullary region of the kidney is extremely high. It is this high medullary osmolarity that causes the water reabsorption. Step one is very big on the point that the water is reabsorbed passively. And because the water is reabsorbed passively, then you should conclude that ADH does not have a dramatic effect on the oxygen consumption of the kidney. And that's a valid point to test, because ADH simply causes the passive reabsorption of water. ADH does not dramatically affect the metabolic rate of the kidney. Now, that represents the efferent aspects of the system. If we look at the afferents that feed into the system, and we will separate volume regulation from the regulation of osmolarity. Now, I'm sure everyone realizes there's no such thing as a volume receptor. Instead, we monitor volume indirectly by monitoring the stretch of vessel walls. Now, we have stretch receptors that are high pressure stretch receptors in the carotid sinus. We also have low pressure stretch receptors in the large veins and the atria of the heart. Now, the high pressure stretch receptors are not considered an important input here. The most important input are the stretch receptors on the venous side of the circulation. Therefore, technically, ADH monitors and regulates volume on the venous side, or the low pressure side of the system. Now, you don't have to memorize any additional details, because everything should go in a logical sequence. Now, thinking about the stretch receptors and the logical response, if you have too much volume on the venous side of the circulation, you would have a greater stretch of the vessel wall. That greater stretch of the vessel wall would stimulate the stretch receptors that would increase afferent activity going towards the central nervous system. And then, thinking logically, this increased afferent activity should decrease the release of ADH. The increased afferent activity should decrease the release of ADH, and you should diurese off this fluid. On the other hand, suppose you're severely dehydrated. Suppose you have a deficiency of fluid on the venous side of the circulation. If you have a deficiency of fluid on the venous side, there will be less stretch of the receptors, there'll be less afferent activity going to the central nervous system, and thinking logically, that should cause an increase in the release of ADH because you would want to reabsorb as much water as you could in the kidney. So that all flows logically then. Now finally here, if we consider the osmoreceptors. Now there are osmoreceptors located in the hypothalamus, but again, just thinking logically about how the system should operate. If you're hyperosmotic, you would expect an increase in the secretion of ADH because you would want to retain fluid and reduce body osmolarity. On the other hand, if body osmolarity is depressed, if osmolarity goes down, you would want to suppress ADH. You would want to diurese off that fluid to increase osmolarity back towards normal. And don't forget, we stated earlier, if you have an osmolarity problem or a sodium concentration problem, in most cases, it is usually a water problem, and that water problem can be solved by changing the secretion of ADH. Now, that finishes off the normal physiology of the system, and we'll continue with the pathophysiology. Now, even though this is fairly straightforward, you have to think very carefully here. Now, the first state we'll take a look at is primary polydipsia. Now this is the same as water intoxication. The person is simply taking in too much fluid. Now we're assuming here the ADH system is intact. Because you have too much fluid and body osmolarity goes down, in this state you should do what? You should decrease your secretion of ADH. Therefore then, you should decrease the permeability of the collecting ducts to water. And because you decrease the permeability of the collecting ducts to water, you would have an increase in urine flow, but you would have a decrease in urine osmolarity. Now in this individual, you have an increase in urine flow and a decrease in urine osmolarity, and that's exactly what you expect in primary polydipsia or water intoxication. Now continuing with the other parameters here then, because you're taking in too much water, the extracellular volume is increased, but the sodium concentration is down, and because your osmolarity is down, intracellular volume increases. Now going to more important disorders here. There are two important disorders they're very likely to test on step one here. One is central or neurogenic diabetes insipidus. The other is SIADH. Now starting with central or neurogenic diabetes insipidus. In this state then, you have an inability to secrete ADH. They will probably not test the nephrogenic form, which is a receptor problem. They're much more likely to test the central disorder. Now, in the central disorder then, you have a deficiency of ADH. Now, if we look at the consequences of this disorder, because you have a deficiency of ADH, you'll have a decreased permeability of the collecting ducts to water, and because of that, the reabsorption of water is inappropriately low. Because you don't reabsorb an appropriate amount of water, you'll have an increased urine flow, but the osmolarity goes down. Now, diabetes insipidus is characterized by a large volume of dilute urine. Now, continuing on with the consequences of that large volume of dilute urine. If you're forming a large volume of urine, the extracellular volume goes down. But because it is dilute urine, extracellular osmolarity increases. The overall consequence is you are dehydrated but hyperosmotic. Now, this is a very important point. Suppose on step one, they describe a patient as being dehydrated but hyperosmotic. What characteristics would you expect in terms of urine formation if the ADH system is intact? If the ADH system is intact, you should be forming a small volume of concentrated urine. Just to repeat that. If the patient is dehydrated and hyperosmotic, if the ADH system is working, that patient should be forming a small volume of concentrated urine. But in diabetes insipidus, the individual continues to form a large volume of dilute urine. And that is now considered diagnostic for diabetes insipidus. So it is very important to know that if the patient is dehydrated and hyperosmotic and continues to form a large volume of dilute urine, that is diagnostic for diabetes insipidus in most cases. Now finally here, if you're hyperosmotic, then the intracellular volume decreases because your cells shrink. Now, the second important disorder here, as I said earlier, is SIADH. Now, SIADH is characterized by a hypersecretion of ADH, usually due to a cancerous tumor. So, SIADH is an inappropriate excessive secretion of ADH. Now, if we look at the consequences, if you have an excessive secretion of ADH, you have an increased permeability of the collecting ducts to water then, and therefore you will reabsorb too much water in the collecting ducts. As a result, urine flow goes down, but urine osmolarity increases. Now, SIADH is characterized as a situation where you're forming a small volume of concentrated urine. It's an inappropriate small volume of concentrated urine. Now, if we consider the consequences then, the extracellular volume increases because you're retaining too much fluid. If you retain too much fluid, your extracellular osmolarity goes down. Now, again, a very important point for step one here. Suppose they describe a patient as being overly hydrated and hypoosmotic. If the patient is overhydrated and hypoosmotic, what characteristics would you expect in terms of urine formation if the ADH system is working? What you'd expect is a large volume of dilute urine. So the person is overly hydrated and hypoosmotic, is retaining too much water, you'd expect a large volume of dilute urine. But if the person has SIADH, the person will form a small volume of concentrated urine. And that is a key point to identify the state, particularly on step one. Now, finally here, because extracellular volume goes down, your cells will swell. Now, I want to emphasize that diabetes insipidus and SIADH are two very important disorders to completely understand. That's why we went through them very carefully. Now, the next hormonal system is a very small, unimportant system. That is atrial nitritic peptide. sometimes called atrial nitritic factor. Now for step one, all you have to know are the basics of the system. First of all, atrial nitritic peptide or hormone is the hormone secreted by the heart tissue. The muscular tissue of the heart secretes atrial nitritic peptide. Now, although this hormone is found throughout the heart, it is mainly found in the right atrium. Now, the point here is the right atrium is a low pressure chamber of the heart. So most of the atrial nitritic peptide is found on the low pressure side of the cardiovascular system. Now, the main physiological stimulus to release AMP is stretch. More specifically, it is stretch of the atrium. If you have too much volume in the atrium, if you have too much volume on the venous side of the circulation, that causes a stretch of the atrium and releases AMP. You also should memorize that this hormone is secreted in response to increased salt intake. Now, the target tissue for AMP is the kidney. And what you have to remember is that AMP increases both sodium loss and water loss by the kidney. Now, the exact mechanism is not well understood, but most textbooks will say it is at least in part due to an increase in GFR. That is what you have to remember for step one. Now, finally here, you might want to remember that AMP tends to antagonize the actions of the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system and ADH.